If music can be seen as a microcosm of the world, just like in real life, subgroups are formed, chopped up, separated, and compartmentalized into perfect little boxes that one is expected to fit into. These divisions are ridiculous. When you take a look at the characteristics used to separate, it all rests on something so minuscule. The sequence of chords on a guitar and how you play those chords, what bands you name drop, or what pants you wear. Basically, high school stuff. Much like in real life where race and class divisions rest on skin color, what neighborhood you live in, or, again, what pants you wear. Frighteningly, we all know these self-appointed gatekeepers, these self-appointed tastemakers who make up these rules as the grand wizards in regional scenes or as imperial wizards masquerading as critics in highly touted music sources, are well beyond high school age. When you've been on the receiving end of the rebuff like me, where I had to eat their distaste for our band because they thought us too lowbrow or me too uppity, you do start to build a thick skin and a natural knee-jerk, knee-in-the-balls for these types of people. But that's what happens when squares take over. They put everything in squares. I've always gravitated to what pushed boundaries and seemed extreme. My fandom for Kiss when I was 6 was because at that age they were the most extreme thing I had ever laid eyes on. As I grew up, I moved on to other extreme representations of music. I slowly found my way. I put it all together and developed my own musical taste. Being a natural-born mutt myself, bands or musicians that crossed over or mixed it up appealed to me. Last episode, we had Ernie C. of Body Count, and Body Count were a band that definitely mixed things up to concoct new depictions of what heavy music was supposed to look and sound like. The Bad Brains were a band that unflinchingly played reggae alongside punk rock. The Beastie Boys played hardcore alongside rap. Celtic Frost also screwed with genres on Into the Pandemonium. I liked that. Other groups like Soundgarden, Suicidal Tendencies, The Jimi Hendrix Experience, Sly and the Family Stone with their mixed race lineups, all these groups had a lasting impression on me and something that I reflect in my own band today. While music pundits gloss over rock or try to expound on it having never really walked its path, they always miss the aberrations. It's always been these aberrations that catch my eye. After Motley Crue and Rat became the victors of the Sunset Strip, the search was on for their successors. The second wave, or the Big Five as it should be known, came in the form of Guns N' Roses, LA Guns, Faster Pussycat, Poison, and Jet Boy. The world knows Guns N' Roses and Poison, but only a slice knows of Jet Boy. Make no mistake, though, Jet Boy were on the front line of bands back in the day, the next band to be the next big thing. They did manage to acquire the much sought-after major label record deal, two, in fact, but fate had other plans. If you think you know a thing or two about the LA scene, then you should know Jet Boy have a prominent seat on its dais. And the reason for my preamble about aberrations and mutts and crossing over is because Jet Boy, to an impressionable, insecure little mutt like me, were an anomaly, mainly because of singer Mickey Finn and his very renowned mohawk. It flummoxed me. What I heard was a rock band, but saw them fronted by a punk rocker. Could you do that? And that impression stayed with me for years. I also loved Feel the Shake. After two albums, the band packed it in around 1992, and that was it. Music changed almost overnight with the Nevermind album, and there wasn't too much room for a lot of bands anymore. After two decades of silence, the band released an EP in 2010, and only last month, 29 years after the release of their last full-length, the band have come roaring back with Born to Fly. What a return to form. It's 12 cuts of party-inducing rock that show the band hasn't missed a beat. In fact, they seem to have learned a few more during the absence. I caught up with guitarist and founding member Billy Rowe during my LA trip to NAMM, a day before the release of Born to Fly. Billy was at the NAMM convention to tend to his main job, owner of Rock and Roll Relics, where he builds custom guitars with utmost craftsmanship. Having musicians as prestigious as Glen Campbell, Billy Joe Armstrong, Bruce Kulick, Ace Von Johnson, Derek St. Holmes, Bob Rock, and Rick Nielsen as his customers is proof Billy knows guitars. There was lots to talk to Billy about, and I really want to continue our conversation on a future episode. NAMM is a volcano of sound, a lot of it unwanted sound, but we managed to find one of the few quiet spots at the convention, the parking lot. All's good. It was a pleasure to talk to Billy. I want to say thank you to everyone enjoying the podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud, and now Spotify. We are now on Spotify, so subscribe and enjoy. Here we go. Billy Rowe of Jet Boy is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. They play the Guinness Dankos, go out down low for free. I'm so glad I do sometimes. Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hey, do. Hey, it's the Danko Jones podcast. You can check us out on iTunes and SoundCloud right now. Right now. Cause it's the Danko Jones podcast. Check us out right now.
I feel it's absolutely compulsory for you to listen to the Danko Jones podcast. Many times, Liz and I camped out in front of our Fisher 500 hi-fi receiver, hanging on Danko's every word. It's what we used for inspiration when we both starred in Under Milkwood. We even got Peter hooked by the end of the production. Peter O'Toole, that is. I implore you to go now and listen to Danko expound on subject matter most of us don't even think twice about. Listen to him turn anything into podcast gold. It's simply fantastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts. Yeah!
Hey Billy, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
How am I? I feel like a kid with a fanzine right now.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Being at NAMM is another. Yeah, it's insane here.
Yeah. So we must acknowledge first, Scotty Slam, our mutual friend, is responsible for this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Meeting up. But I met you in 2010 when we were cruising through the West Coast.
Yeah. That was in Santa Rosa, I believe.
Yeah. Now at the time, you know, I remember Jet Boy from back in the day, and I was surprised. I was expecting, you know, he just said Billy from Jet Boy, so I was expecting you to walk in with a mohawk, but that was Mickey, right?
Mickey,
so that's what made you guys memorable to me, being in Toronto, watching your videos,
right.
Is you were part of that LA scene, but you had this singer who kind of looked like a punk rocker, so I was like, confused as to where to slot you, because, you know, that's what you did back then. You slotted bands in certain categories.
Exactly.
And I'm admittedly surprised that Jet Boy are back and stronger than ever in 2019. You've got a new album, and I'm not saying this because you're in front of me, but it's really strong. It's really good. It's very contemporary as well as a throwback. It's like a throwback, very contemporary, modern throwback, strong rock and roll album.
That's awesome. I mean, that's what we wanted to do. And I think it's more time is for, you know, our time is more now, you know. Like I say, with the mohawk and all that, it did give us that, you know, we did it. Our, you know, Mickey was the punk rock guy. We all grew up on the 70s rock and Kiss and Aerosmith and all that, but he went deep into Exploited and GBH, and, you know, when that stuff was new. And
I thought that's what gave you like an edge.
It did give us an edge.
Yeah.
And I think, but at the same time, it was like, you know, you hear about bands who are ahead of themselves. I think in a lot of ways that made us more ahead of ourselves, because there were challenges when we did that first record of the label, like, oh no, it's a little too intense looking, maybe poof it out a little bit, you know. We're like, what the hell, you know. It's like, you know, we were, you know,
That was the time.
That was the time, yeah. You know, because Mohawks were, you know, you had the Plasmatics and Jean Beauvoir and stuff like that. But
right, that would have been a good cue for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But still, you know, that still was far different from the scene we came from, because everybody else was, you know, Hanoi Rocks were the gods, you know, the Michael Monroe look and the whole, you know, Annie McCoy and all that. So
for people who are listening, we need to place Jet Boy in proper context. Historically, you guys were part of the second wave. You were the first string all-star band of the second wave of L.A. rock. After the Rats and the Motley Crues got their deals and their stardom, you with Guns N' Roses and Poison, and you were the second wave.
Yeah, I think it was...
You must be stated.
Yeah, I mean, it was. It was like when Fern and I used to go to L.A., we were looking for a singer. This was like 83, you know, that's when Fern and I became friends with Izzy and Axel, and we were all into this. We were into Girl and Hanoi Rocks, Lords of the New Church, and, you know, Kix, and that's where we all connected. And through the years, you know, a year later, we had our bands going, and, you know, we had Poison back then, and then along comes Faster and L.A. Guns, and it was
the next
wave. And so we were like, you know, they say the big four with Metallica and that. It's like the big four was kind of like, it could be the big five with, you know, GNR, Jet Boy, Faster, LA Guns, and Poison, you know, for that era. Right. Those were the bands.
Right.
So. It must be stated. I mean, you know, you guys didn't achieve the success of Guns N' Roses, but it must be stated that you guys were neck and neck with those bands at the time. And these days, kids are trying to, like, get back to these roots and figure it out, jigsaw it all together. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be said. So to help them on their way, Jet Boy was definitely a part of that whole second wave.
Yeah, I agree. And with this new record, that's a big part, because, you know, we're starting to do interviews and stuff. A lot of people don't know that history. You know, we got lost in a political label bullshit game. Basically, we got dropped by Elektra, and then the album got held back a year. By the time it came out on MCA, which everybody knows is our label, it was a year old, and all these other bands started passing forward, and everybody passed us up, and the success of Poison and Guns N' Roses and LA Guns, and it just became, you know, bad timing.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that Elektra thing, because you guys are originally from San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
And Metallica seemed to be in 86 the big Elektra band, and they're from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Was there some sort of thing within the label, like, oh, this is where the scene's at, this band Metallica and not this band Jet Boy?
No.
Or do you not know?
No, there wasn't. There was no connection. It was a guy who was at Enigma Records, Steve Pross, and went over to Elektra, and he started following us during when he was at Enigma, and then when he got to Elektra, he basically signed the band. But nothing to do with the Metallica, even though, you know, I've known Kirk Hammett since I was 17. We grew up as, you know, my mom had a clothing store. His brother used to live around the corner. I think he bought his first pair of Spandex at my mom's clothing store. When he was in Exodus. This is way back. I mean, I go way back from him, with him.
Would Paul Bailiff have approved?
Yeah, I think Paul may have worn spandex back then, too. All those guys. It was funny, when Jet Boy started, we would play, since we had the punk rock vibe, all those guys, I grew up with all those guys, Ron Quintana and like, the whole metal scene. I was into that whole new wave of British heavy metal scene. Then I went, discovered Hanoi Rocks, got all glam, but those guys I think most of those guys met their wives at our shows. So it's like, you know, we're all still good friends, you know?
Right, right. Well, like, I just remember growing up in those two scenes, like, between, like, the rock and roll glam scene and the thrash scene was so divided, much like punk rock and metal was. Like, factions were, nowadays, everybody's, like, all cool with everything.
Right, right.
I kind of miss the divisions, because you felt like you were on a team. But yeah, it's cool that you can, you know, walk down the street with a Striper record and no one's going to give you shit about it. But still, I want to pick your brain about that, because Metallica, less than someone like Paul Bailoff, but they sided with all that shit, and
like, how is it? You seem to be caught in the middle of that.
Yeah, we were kind of caught in the, I guess we were caught in the middle, but again, funny enough, I, you know, known Kirk since I was for so many years, and the guys at Exodus, and so many friends from that metal side, you know, the Ian Callens, and, you know, there was Rampage Radio and all that. We were all friends, so there was another, there was a scene outside of the Jet Boy thing, because, you know, like, posers die, as they would say back then.
Well, all right,
but,
okay.
You know, I think we were the one band that brought that thing together, because the old Jet Boy shows, you would have punk rockers, you had glam, tons of girls, and you'd have metalheads.
Right.
They all went, right. You know, it was because we didn't want to exclude anybody, we just kind of, not that we planned it, but... It was that way, so, you know, it was a lot of division then, you know, there really
yeah.
was. You had Broadway in San Francisco, and you had the Stone, the Mabuhay, and then Rock on Broadway. There was a lot of punk rock at the Mabuhay and the on Broadway, and then the Stone was more rock and metal. But then it was just, you know, two yellow lines, you know, you cross the street and you're mismatched, and it's kind of what happened.
But... behind the scenes, everybody's all the bands are cool with each other, kind of thing.
In a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, yes.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
yeah,
that's really cool. I think that's so. Yeah. See, I didn't know that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
If I had knew that about Jet Boy and Metallica,
right,
it could have bridged a lot more gaps for me and helped me figure out
where
to place you guys. Just
right.
as a kid, you know, like I just didn't know. I didn't know. What to think of you guys, mainly
right.
because of Mickey's mohawk.
Sure, sure.
But it did add cred.
It added cred for
a section of a
right.
demographic of people.
Yeah, for sure, for
yeah.
sure.
So you're back now with this new album, and I mean, I don't want it to be like an interview. I'd much rather just wanted to pick your brain about.
I could talk Kiss with you all day.
Yeah, yeah. You emailed me about that, right?
Yeah,
and Motorhead.
Yeah, Motorhead, of course.
I mean, we can go on and on about Kiss,
oh, yeah.
but these days I'm not. Not happy with some of the things they're doing, but...
Yeah, that's going to happen with a lot of bands in a long way.
I guess so.
You know,
but you came out charging with this new album. How's it been? It's not out yet. It's on Frontiers.
Yeah, it's coming out tomorrow. So
oh, really?
The 25th of January, so...
Really, oh, well, this is going to air
after. So it'll be out.
Wow, what an album, man.
Yeah.
Everyone's loving it now. Everyone's got a copy.
Right.
But it is very strong, and Frontiers is a label that is interesting to me.
It is interesting. They have...
From Italy,
and they have a lot of old bands from the 80s.
Glad that someone's, you know, doing it.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, and the door swung open from them out of the blue. You know, we've always talked about doing stuff. We've done spot shows through the years since we kind of got back together in 2006 or something, but nothing major. But this really pulled us together. And like,
was this you approaching them or
no? They approached us, which is even better.
That's great. So
yeah.
that they kicked you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So
wow, that's cool.
And it's
wow.
all new material. All this whole record. It's no scraps from the old days.
Great, yeah, like some people redo stuff just to
yeah.
keep it going.
Right.
I noticed the video, is it, what's it called,
Born to Fly. Yeah.
Andy Gallion is on drums.
Yes, he is, yeah.
And you and him are in a band? I did not know this,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, we have a cover band called The Butlers. And we do basically, it's basically deep tracks of all the stuff we grew up on from like old Thin Lizzy, UFO, and down to Nazareth, The Pistols. Old Def Leppard, High and Dry era, you know?
Nice.
And yeah, it's awesome. You know?
Were you guys in another band together?
With Andy?
Yeah.
No, but when Andy and Death Angel, one of our third show, and probably Death Angel's third show, was us. I don't remember who was first, Death Angel or Jet Boy, but we supported Wasp in 1985. I think Andy
so
was like 14.
Album. Yeah, yeah, that's when I got into Death Angel on Ultraviolence.
Yeah, so this is pre that, for sure. This is probably a couple of years when
he was 12.
He could have been 12 or 13. Yeah.
And that's like first Wasp album, self-titled.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the best album for me.
And that's how it was back then with Jet Boy. We would do shows like that, but then a month later we'd be playing across the street at the Mabuhay with the Toy Dolls.
Right.
And it totally worked.
Right. Like, I get that because we're kind of like that too. Like, we can play like metal shows, mm-hmm. like not shows, but metal festivals.
Right.
More like ear relief mm-hmm. from all the pummeling. We're yeah. used as that. But everybody, nobody says anything. And we're able to vaunt back and forth between the two mm-hmm. worlds.
Right.
But it does leave a lot of people confused,
right.
I've observed.
Right.
Did you find being in Jet Boy having to always clarify and tell people like what band you are?
Yeah, a lot of, I think so, but the Mohawk definitely threw people off, and it was, I got it, the rest of the band, we all understood it. But when you get out of your, you know, basically we got out of LA and you're playing Texas and you right. know South Carolina and stuff like that, people, it hadn't reached there yet, people didn't get it. You know, there were fans that did, but it wasn't a large right. amount of fans, you know.
Right.
So it's just, it's one of those things. I grew up on bands that, you know, were ahead of their time too, in the 70s and even 80s. So Hanoi Rocks, I always bring them up. They were far ahead of their time.
And Sammy Yaffa ended up joining Jet Boy. That's also something that should be noted.
Yeah. Which was, for us, was amazing.
Insane.
It was insane, you know? You know,
like that influence. That
influence. And then he is in the band.
How
and,
did that happen?
Well, we were, you know, it's noted out there with our relationship with Guns N' Roses, what happened with our former bass player, and he ended up dying, mm-hmm. you know, after we let him go from the band. And our manager said, if you could have any bass player, who would you want? And we were just like, I think I just said, Sam Yaffa would be amazing. And she did some investigation and got a message to him, and he heard a demo and flew over and didn't go back.
That's amazing.
It was unreal.
That's you know? Crazy.
Yeah, it was great. We're still pals to this day.
Ask. Have you seen his show?
I haven't seen his show because for some reason I can't seem to get it on any anything out here. And,
yeah, it's only in Europe, Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's out on DVD, I think.
It could be. I'll have to get it for sure.
I've seen like one season and a half.
Uh-huh.
It's really so good.
Sammy. I mean, him and I lived together for years. Like, when, the whole time we were roommates up to the very end until he moved back to New York to play with Mike. And he would always play very collective, you know, music. I'd be waking up to him like, what is this? You know, and I'd have no idea. It'd be like fully exactly what he's doing with the show.
Right.
So it's like so perfect for him. He's
okay.
just, he's... Yeah, he's a great person.
He's really good for, like, the show's really interesting to watch, and I could see he's got a personality that very likable, and mm-hmm. and anybody can kind of get along with him.
Yeah.
He's that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. We've run into him across the pond a few times. We played with Michael Monroe last summer.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, and we were in Helsinki one night, and the Backyard Babies were playing, and uh-huh. he was backstage, and I had just started watching his show.
Oh,
so I'm
nice.
Like, oh, my God, dude, I just saw you today. You're talking to some dude in Nigeria.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
like some crazy thing. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
It's a cool... It's a. He was on the podcast.
Yeah, I listened to that.
Oh,
podcast.
Cool. Okay, yeah. Okay, so the...
Podcast,
oh, cool.
Like big time.
Oh, that's great. So... That's cool. And then you're here at NAMM, and we're in the parking lot at NAMM because it's so fucking loud in there. I mean, if there's any way to turn me off of rock and roll and music, just stay there for like 3 days, like you're going to do. It's a good thing you finished writing and recording the new album before NAMM.
Yeah.
But that's because you have your own booth.
Yeah, I do.
I found you through the map. The NAMM map, Rock and Roll Relics.
Yeah.
What's all that about?
I've always been into guitars and building shit since I was in high school. And really it came down to like, what the hell am I going to do with myself? I started seeing this little fad of the aged guitars, and I started just building stuff for fun. And it just slowly turned into a company. I got my own brand. It's all classic style stuff with a couple of our own, you know, designs and stuff, but it's I got stores all over the world right now, and it's what I do.
So you build it from?
Yeah, we build them from scratch. You know, we work with, you know, there's CNC machines that cut all the wood and all the you know,
yeah.
that part, but it's all hands-on. I do all the finish work, all the aging. I got one guy full-time, but I'm looking for probably another two, because we're doing, you know, close to over 200 guitars a year now.
Wow.
And it's insane, you know. But it's awesome. I've been doing some work for some cool people. You know, I did. We did a limited run with Bruce Kulick from Kiss, and
Oh, that would have been cool for you, man.
That was awesome. Yeah, we became friends through all that, and then you know, Billy Joe and Mike Dern from Green Day, they're big fans. Billy Joe played one of our Thunders model, which is our, you know.
Oh, OG. Really? There's a.
It's a Thunders model.
So what's that about?
I call it my Thunders model because I'm a huge Donnie Thunders fan, and it's an ode to a guy who nobody will ever do a signature guitar on. So it's basically the name of my model. So it's a double cut, you know, junior style, but it's also, I do the single cut. It's that style slab, you know.
I didn't know that.
Slab board guitar.
You got to show me that in there.
Yeah. Oh, and that's they're all beat cool. up. I age them and make them look all old and punk rock. And we're gonna work. We're working with the estate, actually, Johnny's nephew, and we're gonna do a limited run of just a LAMF or like a Chinese Rocks, and it's gonna come with some bonus stuff. And you know, we're working on that project right now. It's kind of a slow burning one, but we're getting there.
Wow. And how about Sylvain? Sylvain?
Yeah, I have nothing for Sylvain, but I do know Sylvain. You know, it'd be great to build something for him and get him involved. You know,
there's one time he came to Toronto, and we had, through a friend, our mutual friend, we had, me and JC had lunch with Sylvain Sylvain, and then we drove around Toronto, and he told us, he gave us a tour of our own city through the New York Dolls experience. Yeah, like, we played there, Kiss opened for us here. So and it's like a bank now and everything in Chinatown. I'm like, wow, that's cool, yeah.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah. He's really cool. He's really nice.
Great guy.
Yeah. I was surprised.
He's amazing. I met him through an old friend of mine who knew the Dolls from way back and his solo stuff. And I got up and did Pills one time. He came through San Francisco and, you know, he's like, I'm going to bring the real Jet Boy on stage. I'm like, oh, man, you got to be kidding me. Come on. It's like, you know, I had another band called American Heartbreak through like the late 90s, early 2000, and we played with the Dolls. Sam got us on the SF show. When they were doing the reunion stuff when Sam was in the band with the Dolls.
Right.
Yeah, so.
That was David Johansen and Sylvain Sylvain.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then dudes from Electric Boys in Hanoi?
It was Steve Conte, who's in and Michael Monroe now. He was the Johnny Thunders.
With Michael. Yeah.
He's with Michael still, yeah. And I don't remember who the drummer was. And then Sammy.
Yeah, okay.
They did a great record, man. They did
and
two
And they're still
albums.
Together with Carl on
drums and
Michael
with Michael.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting the Dolls mixed up with Michael Monroe.
Right.
But
whatever. That works though.
Yeah. That's cool though. I didn't know about that Johnny Thunders model.
Yeah.
That is fucking.
So I'm doing the estate model, but it's basically I name all my models. I have a Telly. I call it my Richards, which of course.
Right.
You know, and then I have my new hollow body with these lightning bolt F-holes. It's my lightning. But my first one that really got me to where what I'm doing now with this company is my Thunders model. I started doing a TV yellow double cut. This is my Rock and Roll Relics Thunders model. And now it's known as this go-to double cut junior style guitar.
Well, it kind of raised my eyebrow, too. I was like,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That is cool. Now,
I'm not a gearhead. I can't talk guitars with you past, wow, that looks cool. Well, that's all I got.
That's all that matters.
Like, I can't talk about, like, pickups or, you know, like, anything.
You know, I talk that stuff, but growing up on the stuff I grew up on, I really didn't give a shit about that either. It's like, look, if it felt good and it sounded right, I don't give a shit what's inside it, you know? But there's a deep, you know, obviously it's what I do, so I get more into it and I can go down that rabbit hole a little bit, but I'm a simple, my guitar playing is you know, super simple. I like to just plug into a Marshall and just let her rip.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's kind of what I was schooled on, you know, which is half rock and roll, half punk rock in a way, you know, just.
Yeah, that's basically the way to do it.
Yeah, I think so.
That's why I hold on to the punk rock side of me is because punk rock wouldn't try and learn anything about guitars.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Johnny Ramone really gave too
much.
He played the same guitar, the same Marshalls, and just probably the same volume and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, incredible.
Well, let me see what else I got here.
Oh, yeah. On the new Jet Boy. So Andy's not playing drums.
No, he didn't play on the
record.
On
the album.
No.
Will he if there's shows?
He did two shows with us. We did over the holidays. We did two shows with Junkyard.
Oh.
which is cool. Another our buddies, you know.
Oh, great, yeah, that's another...
Another great band that's underrated. Another,
and crossed over,
yeah,
like, genres, like you guys,
of
with, of course...
Brian Baker.
Brian Baker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who,
exactly.
I couldn't, when I first saw that, I couldn't, I still can't compute
right.
when I saw him. I was, I couldn't, I didn't understand.
Yeah,
I can't even finish a sentence.
Red, yeah, yeah. Nasty, and then all of a sudden, wait, he's got long hair and wearing a jean vest with a back patch that says Junkyard.
I just cut off my hair, man. Yeah. Like, I used to have long hair.
Right.
It was more like if Slash, like a Slash type uh-huh. big bouffant thing. But when I saw it, I think in that first Junkyard video, he's got a jean vest
yeah.
with, like, patches and mm-hmm. long blonde hair, and he's, like, doing all the moves that all the yeah. all the rock and roll bands did. And then I read an article about him, and I saw Minor Threat, mm-hmm. and I was like, "That is the guy." I couldn't put it together, and so of course nowadays, Junkyard, you guys, it all makes sense now.
Right.
Like we're past all that.
Right, right.
So that wow, okay. So you guys played with Junkyard.
Yeah, we played with Junkyard, and Andy filled in at a couple shows. We have a new drummer now. Our original drummer is not with us. He's, you know, we're still good buddies, but anyways. And he's got a Vegas gig, and he couldn't do those two shows, so Andy filled in. It was the same thing with the videos, and Andy's our bro. Everybody, you know, Mickey and Fern, original members, we all know Andy, so he's always ready to roll.
Andy and Den were going to do some sort of Motorhead cover thing, and I was supposed to sing.
They should. I'll tell them.
I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but I was going to sing a few songs or a song
or
something.
I'm sure he'd be all into it.
But then it never happened. This is going back, like... 5-6 years.
Oh, really? Well, I'll tell Andy that.
Yeah, tell Andy.
It can happen.
Let's fucking do it, man.
I will.
I want to
see it.
Get on guitar. Fucking do it. Dan will be on bass.
Yeah, that'll be great. I'll do some fast, heady stuff. Yeah, that's like, I'm down with that.
I'll just sing.
Well,
it's the easiest part of the gig.
Well, yeah, that's not easy for me.
Yeah.
Well, you're a monster on stage, so hey.
Well, I got to sing amazing. Tonight.
Oh, really?
I sang yesterday. But I got to sing tonight at House of Blues for Marty Friedman.
Oh, okay.
I'm doing two songs.
Oh, cool.
But it's... And he... I sang a song on his album.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to do one of our songs. We've never played live before. And so I'm going to sing a song of ours that I've never sung live. But I don't have a guitar. It was great. It felt so freeing.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
It's wicked being just the singer, man.
Uh-huh. It's
super cool. And you can kind of... You kind of deke out of like loading gear and loading in and out. Like you totally duck out.
Oh yeah, for sure.
There's so many excuses singers have.
Just carry a mic stand.
Totally.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. That's why I am a singer. Like if you're that, what are you, a guitar player or a singer? I'm like, well, I do like to duck out of loading, so I'm a singer, man, by default.
Yeah, that's
man.
A good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a singer. I can't fake it.
Oh, classic.
Yeah, but, oh, that's cool, man. I think I got... Oh. So Chris Shiflett was on your album.
Yeah, he played a solo on one of the songs. And the funny thing, that Chris... There were three guys. It was Luke Tierney, who actually produced this new record. He was in a band called Silverjet. They were great. They were on Virgin. Great record, if you could find it. And then Chris Shiflett... who we all know, and then this guy Marco, who was in this band Sugar Cult. They were all Santa Barbara kids, had a band called Lost Kittens, and they grew up driving to LA as kids and then coming to see Jetboy. They were all huge Jetboy fans. So in actually our first video, the Feel the Shake video, those three guys are in it, and you can actually see Chris. So when it came time to doing the record to Luke, I go, let's get Chris to play a solo. You know, he's into this super country stuff now. He's a ripping guitar player. The song kind of could use something like that, and he was like, tell me when and where, I'm in.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised. I didn't know there was a connection. I just thought it was just LA networking collection.
Total Jetboy connection.
He's in Feel the Shake? He's in?
Yeah, I haven't freeze-framed the video, but he's the one who told me.
Right.
Oh, you could see me in it.
Oh, cool.
Like, that's awesome.
Probably in the back.
It's funny how the wheel turns, though, years later, and then look at him now. He's like the biggest band in the world.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great. I think I have 27 minutes.
Okay.
So I usually do a 5 to 8 minute intro.
Right.
I don't really like to do them more than 45 minutes.
Right.
So.
Yeah, whatever works. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm just down with this doing this. I can geek out more and more. We can talk Motorhead.
I mean, we could talk. Like, I mean, if we
goes down and back up.
If we open those doors up, there's no turning back.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't know. You got to go back to your
to your
booth, and I got to not run out of battery.
Right.
But, yeah, you should come back. We'll talk about Kiss or Motorhead or both.
Yeah. It's definitely, I got a ton of Motorhead stories.
You did? You mentioned a few in the email, and I was like, oh, fuck. We could just talk about that. But then...
Playing on stage with us. And I used to pick him up. I picked him up at his apartment once when he sang demos with us, and... did the spoken word thing that's actually on this new record. He opened the gate with his short shorts on and, you know, sat down on his couch and wait for him to get ready, and he pulls out a buck knife, stuck it in a bag of speed, and goes, "You want any?"
Really?
I said, "No, I'm all right." And he swallowed it. Wow. I'll never forget that. God bless him.
And the spoken vocals he did, when did he do that?
He recorded that in 92.
And it's on this new album?
It's on this new album. We lifted it from this thing called The Reading, which was an intro to an old song that we put out on some small label years ago. And we just, it just, Beating the Odds, it's got that kind of old Priest Motorhead vibe. And we just thought, you know, Fern said, he goes, we should lift a part of The Reading. And it's perfect. So it's also perfect timing because we just lost the legend. And
wow.
Yeah, it was great. I'll never forget working with him in the studio. Watching them say, turn up the headphones, and we're like, they're already on 12. Can't go any louder, you know?
That was in 92?
That was in 92. Mick was in there singing with him. He goes, I couldn't hear myself because his headphones were so goddamn loud. And he was just calm as can be, saying, turn it up louder.
I sang with Motorhead a few times.
Yeah, I know.
And it's the loudest fucking...
It's blistering.
It's... You can't hear yourself.
No, you can't. It's just complete... It's insane.
It's like an airplane. You're standing beside an airplane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Motorhead's one of the greatest.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's all the Ace of Spades tour as a kid. A small club.
Wow.
Changed my life.
Wow, man. Wow, we'll come. We'll do a fucking another episode
could,
or whatever.
Yeah, we could do that for sure.
Yeah. We'll do it again. This has been great.
Good, good.
Thanks for...
I'm a big fan of you, so...
Thanks for taking time out.
Danko Jones is a... You guys are a phenomenal band.
Thank you. Thank you, Billy.
Can't
thank you.
The new record.
Yeah, it's coming out soon.
I'm ready.
It's partly why I'm here, too.
Yeah, we gotta, you know... That's what you gotta do.
All right, man.
All right, good times.
Cool.
Some days, it seems so easy. From start to finish, then we do it. Still we try to find the answer.